Hey guys, it's Albert. We got a surprise for you this week. It's a very special post-trade deadline edition of the show. I got my buddies Bart Scott and Andrew Perloff in with me. And as we always do, we'll answer all of your mail. Let's go. All right, welcome in. Week 8's in the books. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. But we're not going to talk so much about Week 8 right now because it's trade deadline day. And so I figured instead of doing the show the regular way that we do it here, we would just bring in a couple of guys that I trust, that I think are the best in the business at what they do. Bart Scott from WFAN, former Jets and Ravens linebacker. Andrew Perloff from the Dan Patrick Show. These two guys are my co-hosts on the MMQB TV. Guys, I think like the story today isn't what did happen, it's what didn't happen, right?
Yeah, I can't move forward, man. You got me all choked up with bringing me in like that, man. You can't come to me first. You got to go to Andrew. You can't come to me first.
Okay, well, I can tell you what I did today. I listened to Bart Scott on the radio talking about the Jets and the emotional impact of that locker room of, say, Jamal Adams is on the market, Le'Veon Bell's on the market. To me, the Jets not trading is the event of the day.
Let's start that. We're there then. Yes. Okay, topic number one, and this sort of like bubbled up. Like we knew Leonard Williams was going to be available. He got moved yesterday. We knew Robbie Anderson's name was out there and could potentially be moved. He's in a contract year. He didn't get moved. But then over the course of Tuesday, some bigger names came into the mix. Yep. And really, the Jets sort of pushed the idea out there. Everyone except for Sam Darnold and Quinnen Williams is available. So early in the day, we heard Le'Veon Bell's name. We've heard Jamal Adams' name. And Bart, I want to start with you because I wonder what the fallout is now when 51 out of 53 guys basically probably read on social media during the Dan Tuesday that they were available and the Jets were listening on everybody. What are the repercussions? What's work going to be like tomorrow?
I think it'll be fine because no harm, no foul, right? This is the landscape of modern athletics. We've always heard, you know, New York's a baseball town, so we hear Syndergaard and the trade rumors every year. Jamal Adams, when you're a team that's 1-5, everybody's available but the franchise quarterback because that's the one person that's hard to replace. And Quinnen Williams, of course, because he just got here, you spent a high draft pick on him. But when you look at the fact that Jamal Adams was even available for the right price or Le'Veon Bell was available for the right price, what that means is we overvalued these players and we believe that we were better and farther along in our rebuilding process than we thought. Now, we saw this just last year, right?
Right.
Sign Odell Beckham. I didn't sign him to trade him. Mm-hmm. But what happens is you signed him and thought that the pieces together and thought that Eli was able to carry the team. It didn't work out that way. So when you see general managers do that, I think it's an admission that they made a mistake, and we rarely get to hear them say that verbally, but they show us with their actions. So the fact that, not saying that this was a miscalculation by Joe Douglas, it's a miscalculation by Maccagnan, and it just shows you that he didn't value or believe that that Joe would make the same moves if he was in the same situation. So why not try and dump some of that salary so I can bring in the center pieces that I believe in?
Andrew, I mean, he said it, like, there's, I mean, it's a level of investment, right? Joe Douglas wasn't there when they signed Le'Veon Bell. Joe Douglas wasn't there when they drafted Jamal Adams. And Joe Douglas isn't invested in almost anyone in that building.
He's getting rid of all the Maccagnan guys. You know, Adam Gase said it. He didn't want Le'Veon Bell there. He didn't need Le'Veon. Le'Veon Bell is the one piece that does not fit a rebuilding team. I have a lot of faith in Joe Douglas. I actually heard Bart say something, too, like, they got to build that offensive line. I mean, you have that investment in Sam Darnold. You got to do that in a hurry. I think that's going to be their number one priority. They've been overdrafting on defensive line and defensive backfield and what's it been doing. I mean, look at Sheldon Richardson, Mo Wilkerson, Quentin Coples, go down the list. And Quentin Williams, too. I'm not sure what their strategy was before Joe Douglas got here.
Well, when you look at Quentin Williams, and you know, he's been fine. But then when you look at Sunday's matchup, you see Josh Allen, who's a difference maker, and they passed on him for that. And, you know, I think the biggest indictment on the Jets is the fact that Muhammad Wilkerson is the last player that saw a second contract.
Yeah.
So if you're not re-signing your first-round draft picks going all the way back to Kyle Wilson, you can't build this team because you can't sustain the level that you need to compete in this league because you can't pay top dollar for all your talent. You have to have, you know, the redistribution of funds. And the redistribution of funds is as good players exit out because they become overpriced for their value, you have other ones waiting in the wings. The problem is once Beaton went down, once Mosley and Avery went down, you had nobody in the pipeline. So in baseball, we always talk about farm systems. What Joe Douglas has witnessed is tremendous farm systems. And I can just use my, because I don't like to rub people the wrong way. I don't want people to say, oh, he's pointing fingers and calling people out. I've been reprimanded for that. So, you know, I'll keep it all good. So I'll use myself as an example, right? Before I got to the Baltimore Ravens, Jamie Sharper was there. Jamie Sharper, you know, got picked up in expansion draft to the Houston Texans. In comes Ed Hartwell. Ed Hartwell becomes a great player. He leaves. In comes myself. I leave. After that, in comes Jamil McClain. Mm-hmm. Jamil McClain leave. See, so yeah. that's ultimately what you want. Because you in a cap sport, you have to have a redistribution of salary. So you price, it's like the circle of life. Yep. You come in poor, you come in as a first round draft pick, you become highest paid, and you die.
But how many GMs and coaches were there in Baltimore for all those moves?
One.
Right. And that's the thing is like, so I think that it does say like, it does, one, when you're talking about like all the first round picks not being re-signed, it is a failure of the pick. But to me, it's also like the people who invested in the player are gone. Like how many of those first round picks when they got to the end of their rookie contracts still had as a coworker the general manager who selected them?
Yeah. Darren Lee, I don't even know who brought him in. And that's the biggest indictment, right? Because first round draft picks should be easy.
Yeah.
I mean, those are slam dunks.
Yep.
Right. And like I said on my show the other day, you don't need them to be Pro Bowlers or pros because it don't always work out like that. But you need them to be able to stay in the NFL.
You need them to stay on the roster.
I mean, Stephen Hill got cut by the AAF. Mm-hmm. You know how bad you got to be not to get picked up by the AAF, not make that roster?
Did you guys know right away on him?
I knew that he could run fast, but he was built like Bambi, and it looked like one hard hit could end his life. Yeah.
Is this part of the Patriots effect too, where every team in that division just keeps looking for a new answer? And
well, I think it's almost like they're in everybody's head. I mean, that's part of it too. Is like I think that they've almost destabilized everybody else in the division because you can't have like in other divisions, like you could have a year where you go 9-7 and win the division, right? And it saves everybody's job or gets everybody an extra year or two. Right. But that doesn't happen in the AFC East. You know, like you're going to take a couple extra losses than you are in other divisions because they're there and you're not winning the division. And so like you're going to go 3 or 4 years, maybe not making the playoffs, where in another division you might be able to sneak into the playoffs and that buys you another year or two. So they've like actively destabilized other teams in the division. The other thing I would say on the Jets, and I think this is really interesting. So I do think that part of what we saw with Jamal and Le'Veon Bell was driven by the players. Oh. I'm not sure they wanted to be there anymore. Mm. I'm not sure they believe that Adam Gase believes in them. And so not so much Le'Veon because his money's guaranteed and everything else. Is Jamal Adams, Bart, going to be Jalen Ramsey in 2020?
I think he can be. I think he'll say, hey, don't pick up my option. I don't want to be here unless things drastically change. But the problem is things can't drastically change because they're not one free agent. They're not one Whitworth away from being great. Now, if all the pieces came back and they were healthy, I think that they would be okay. But the fact that they missed on Kelechi Asimile, which means that who knows if free agents will even want to come here. Because that's a unique situation where you can't trust the doctors and that whole situation. Quincy Enunwa, right after he got paid a bunch of money, might not ever play again.
Right.
And if he comes back, he's going to hamstring your organization because so much money is guaranteed to him. He's only in the second year of his big – or matter of fact, he's in his first year, I believe, of his big deal, which is $35 million. So how do you improve this team? The problem is that great linemen aren't readily available, right? They aren't readily available. So you have to do it like the Titans did it. You have to do it like the Cowboys did it, where you're going to have some not attractive drafts.
Well, it's
to
like
be
what
able
the Colts
build
did. What the Colts did,
and it was and nobody
what
ever
the Texans did this year. Yeah,
right. Nobody said, "Whoa, man,
they did great."
Man, the coach really won this draft with Nelson.
No one's going to get excited over a guard, but Quentin Nelson changed the face of the Colts.
Right, and remember when this team was at its height, they used two first round picks on Nick Mangold and DeBrickashaw Ferguson.
Is it okay that Jamal Adams is the informal spokesperson for this team? Shouldn't it be the quarterback? I wonder, after a loss, it feels like a lot of people are turning to Jamal Adams to see what he's going to say.
Well, he's the older player, right?
And not that much older.
I mean, he's a year. He was here before Sam Darnold got here. He's an elite player. So you're always going to put the mic in there because you know you're going to get something from it. And then sometimes we believe that the quarterback has to be the leader of the team. No, a quarterback grows into being a leader. You can't self-appoint a player because it's personality-based. It's personality-driven. And you can't ask somebody to stand up in front of a team if that's not their personality because it comes off as unauthentic. And I can't remember on any team I've ever played on, maybe that's why I never won a Super Bowl, where the quarterback was the voice of the organization. But then again, the Ravens won with non-quarterbacks. They have two Super Bowls by leaders that wasn't the vocal leader.
I mean, I will say this too. I know the people who scouted him, like coming out of LSU, one of the appeal, like part of the appeal about Jamal Adams when he was coming out of LSU was that he was the alpha, like that he was willing to be the face of the program. And I think that he can be that for a really good team. We've seen defensive players out front before. I mean, hell, even the old Patriots teams that I covered way back in the day, I mean, in a lot of ways, Rodney Harrison was their voice.
Right.
You know, like, and I sort of see it similar to that in a certain way. I would not rule out, we'll just end the Jets talk here. I would not rule out, like, that in 2020, he's Jalen Ramsey, that he got a sort of a sniff of, like, maybe I could go to Dallas. Listen, I could go to Baltimore.
Yeah.
He just got that taste of it. And, like, if the rest of the season goes the way the first half of the season's gone, I don't think it's impossible where you see Jalen Ramsey. We've heard the way he's talking, right, Bart? I don't come from losing.
Right.
We don't. He sees what Jalen Ramsey
did. I'm trying
to
figure out where did he win at, though. Because he was at LSU. I don't remember him coming from winning either.
Well, they went like 9-2 or 10-2, right? Like something like that. Yeah.
No national championships. Yeah. But, you know, I believe that Ryan Clark doesn't break news.
Right.
So unless somebody was feeding him that, and who else would feed it but somebody from Jamal's camp?
Right. He's an LSU
guy. Right. So
all that.
So I believe he has a sniff maybe of that. And who would want to be here for 4 years? See, Le'Veon Bell's been here for 1 year, so maybe he can endure. He has a greater appetite because he's just great, happy to be back.
Okay. No news topic number two for the week. Trent Williams is still a Washington Redskin. The saga carries on. The Redskins have held on to him. I'm told the asking price was a first-round pick. They weren't able to get it. This thing did not need to get as ugly as it's gotten. A lot of teams out there, I think the Cleveland Browns are obviously front and center. The Patriots couldn't have afforded him cap-wise, but I know they had some interest in offensive linemen. I mean, look, top-shelf left tackle. You would have been able to move him. Like, you would have been able to find a suitor.
Your nose to spite your face.
Instead, you wait till the last day to find out what you're going to do when teams have used up their cap space, when teams have used up their resources.
Yep.
You wait till the very last day to put him out there. And now the Redskins are stuck with a player who doesn't want to be there, who may not show up. Like, this just feels like, if we want to talk about a player as an asset, this is a mismanagement of the asset, Bart.
Cut your nose to spite your face, right? Yeah. So this is the problem when you have, I want to say, entitled, spoiled billionaires, right? Because we know that this comes from the top.
Yep.
If Snyder had vision and say, hey, this is an asset that we need to move, in his business, if he had opportunity in the business world to move an asset that he wasn't being able to utilize, to be able to level up, to be able to improve his business in the future, he would have did it. But what happens is when it gets into sports and you're a fan of the team that you own, your emotions get attached. And how dare he tell us that he's not going to play for us?
And where are you now? Trent Williams is not coming back.
Right.
So you have Dwayne Haskins, who doesn't look like he's getting any better. I know he's only played one time. Does it look to you guys like he's going to be ready by next year without the right coach and without an O-line? Their O-line has been terrible. So as a franchise, they're not tanking, but they're not rebuilding. I don't know what they're doing, where they're going, where are they going to be next year? It feels like they're in the same place again and again and again.
This felt from the start like it was an organization trying to prove a point to a player.
Yeah.
Like it was, you know what, you're going to screw with our medical staff, you're going to tell us that we mishandle this, screw you. Like, you don't want to show up, fine, don't show up. We're not going to do you any favors.
But you know what the next move is? And we've seen this. We didn't see it with Kelechi Asemele because he felt like, I really need surgery. But we saw it with Jalen Ramsey. Monday, my tummy hurts. or my back hurts.
Yeah. Right.
Tuesday, I'm having a baby. Wednesday, my back hurts, right? So
if I were him, I'd show up and do that.
I'll show up and say, ow.
Yeah.
And make it apparent that, ow, it hurts. Or, ow, I'll go out there for one play, and ow, ooh, my hamstring.
Yeah.
So, like, if you want to play that game, players have more power than people think. And if you do you want this type of dysfunction in your organization?
Well, it's already there. I mean, Alex Smith.
Not many players have that sort of, like, leverage, and Trent does.
Right,
Trent's a top five tackle when he's healthy.
You can't just say it's him and the medical stuff when you have this history. You know, look at what happened to Alex Smith and all the surgeries.
Yep.
Look at Colt McCoy. His recovery didn't go well. There's so many guys. I mean, the Redskins can't possibly be singling out Trent Williams here when it comes to health. I mean, they have so many problems here. And, you know, I'm really shocked that they didn't do this. Not only did they not do it today, they should have done it 4 weeks ago. What was happening? What did they expect to change?
I think they were digging in, saying that we're not going to allow I forgot the general manager and what sport it was. I think it was basketball when he said the inmate. Oh, it was the late Bob McNair saying that the inmates can't run an asylum. So it's some owners have that type of mentality where I'm not going to be told what to do from an employee. This is my business, and they're my employee, so I'm not going to let them dictate to me what I'm going to do. But I think the tipping point in the Kelechi Asemele was when he said he was going to sue the medical staff.
Yep.
So Trent Williams could take something from that and say, you know what, I'm going to sue these doctors that you work for and file a complaint with the Washington Medical Association, whatever it is, and maybe that would be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
So, Albert, do you know what happened this week where all of a sudden he did become available?
Yeah, right. I mean, I think my understanding was they circled back to a bunch of the teams that had shown interest, and they had stonewalled these teams in the past and were trying to ascertain what they might be able to get for them. Mm-hmm. I heard it was a very firm one, this is what we're going to do.
And not a high one because they're teams in contention.
If you want to do this, you know, maybe we can work something out, but that's the deal. And, you know, part of the issue is, so if you only have a day left, right? A, you have to have the cap space to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's paid. B, if you're another team, you have no idea where he's at from a health standpoint.
Right.
And that's a significant hurdle. I mean, like, this is a guy.
Hey, is he working out?
Yeah. I mean, well, no, as great as he's been, like, but before you even get to is he in shape,
injured,
is he healthy? Like, you don't know. And so, like, if you're going to trade a first-round pick for the guy, it's like, I need full medicals on him, and I need him in my building, and I need to figure out, like, whether or not he's healthy. And so, like, to me, it's like, this was a, like, sort of a complicated deal to pull off in 24 hours. And if you're another team, do you want to jump through all of those hoops?
Nah.
I mean, if you make him available a week ago, that's a different story. You made him available, after you played a game.
Well, yeah.
Or after week eight was over, and, like, these teams have, they got to scramble to see if they can do it. It just didn't make sense.
So that's what I'm saying. Do you think that this was a attempt to try and pacify the fan base to say, hey, we tried to move him, nobody wanted him, we couldn't get it done?
That very well could be it. Like, that, like, hey, we actually know what we're doing.
Right.
This isn't actually a clown
show. No, we tried to move him, nobody wanted to give us our price.
You see, Trent, that's what you aren't worth what you think you're worth.
Look what Laramie Tunsil got.
They're panicked because the Nationals are good all of a sudden. Now the Redskins are feeling the pressure.
Okay, news topic number three. This, to me, is I feel like I've got to, like, sort of let Andrew down easy on this one. The Cincinnati Bengals benched Andy Dalton on his 32nd birthday, no less. They didn't make any trades. AJ Green's still there. Tyler Eifert's still there. Geno Atkins is still there. They stood pat there. They are going to Ryan Finley. My understanding, the reason why they're going to Ryan Finley, and I think this part of it makes sense. Obviously, they're 0-8. They want to figure out what they've got in Ryan Finley before they decide what they're going to do. I also think there could be a side benefit here, which is you may lose. I mean, it's not like you can lose at a more prolific clip than they have already, but you might keep losing.
Competitive tanking. Yep. Like, we just don't have the weapon.
Right. Like, I mean, it's like the Dolphins put Xavien Howard on IR today, even though he doesn't have any ligament damage. Like, that's interesting. So I think, I look at this as the Bengals are waving the white flag on the season. They're going to assess Ryan Finley. If it means that they keep losing,
a race to the bottom,
just okay with that. I think what's interesting here is what Andy Dalton's future is, because I think he's probably in the phase of his career now where, so say you're like Miami next year,
right?
And you want a bridge guy when you draft Tua or you draft Herbert or whoever it is. Like, and you want a guy who like can come in and be a good mentor to the starter, to your rookie, and can start if your rookie's not ready. Like, I think he's sort of that guy now.
A younger Fitzpatrick. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, first of all, let's talk about the fact that it's his birthday today and they do this. What about loyalty? All right, this is a couple numbers for you, Bart.
I mean, they don't play for another 12 days. You could have waited, right?
Yeah, you could have waited. Not like that. You have the worst running game in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I mean, Joe Mixon could find a tackler in a dark basement. He is unbelievable on first down. You have the worst defense in the league, worst run defense in the league.
Terrible offensive line.
You have had no John Ross, and you've had no A.J. Green. You have no speed at receiver. Your offensive line is terrible. This is obviously, and Andy Dalton's fourth in the entire NFL in passing yards. He's not the problem. I do get what you're saying. And Finley did look good in the preseason. I mean, in his second role. The question is, you know, so they're going to tank and try and get Tua? Is that the plan here?
Well,
is this a real tank job?
Well, the thing is, Andy Dalton isn't the problem, but he isn't the answer either, right?
Yeah.
Because you know what you have with him. You have a guy that's a stabilizer, not an elevator, and we've seen him in pressure situations where they needed him to be his best against T.J. Yates, against, you know, all these teams that they had stock teams, they couldn't get over the hump. Right, so how many times do you have to see it before you believe that this guy is just simply what he is?
Yeah.
And the problem is the Bengals is one of these old school, the good and the bad about the Bengals. If they give you a contract and you're horrible, they won't fire you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if you overachieve or you punch above your weight, they won't give you a raise either. It's kind of is what it is.
Yeah.
I gave you a word. This is your contract. This is what you do. We saw it with Ocho Cinco. We saw it with Jose Mazada. And they're saying, hey, A.J. Green, we have you contractually under contract for this amount of time. If you want to leave when your contract's up, that's fine. But you're not leaving one day earlier, not 1 year earlier. Yeah. It swings both ways. So it's a good and a bad of being a Bengal. And people that sign there should understand that this is how the organization does business. It's how they've always done business. And be careful what you sign up for.
I wonder, you know, AJ and Andy are, it's well documented, they're best
Geno
friends.
Atkins, though.
Yeah. Does AJ want to stay after this? Free agent next year? I doubt it.
He's a weird cat, man.
I think the Bengals, remember they drafted Andy Dalton and AJ Green in the same draft. They do a similar thing. They got to get Chase Young at Ohio State, who people are starting to talk about. Is they need a defensive player. They have not had anybody on defense.
Chase Young saying, please,
and
no.
Then do a
please.
Then they're probably going to draft another second-round quarterback.
Like Jets, tank more.
But I think, Andy, you know, you're looking at the exactly like you said, the bridge jobs. Chicago, that's the one I'm curious about.
That's the
about.
One that's really interesting. Because
it's tragic,
Chicago's got cap issues next year. I don't know if Chicago can move forward with Mitch Trubisky. And Bart, we've talked about this before. When you've got a great defense, the window is shorter.
Yeah.
Like, right? Like, it's not – you have a great quarterback. It can stabilize your franchise for 15 years. You have a great defense.
Yeah.
Like, you really probably have – 3 or 4 years at best where you're going to be able to keep the group together and everybody's still in their prime.
See, I saw Andy Dalton with a great defense.
Yeah.
With great skill players, with Tyler Eifert, with A.J. Green, Tyler Boyd.
They got to the playoffs.
Yeah, but I've seen him playoffs, right? Yeah. But then when he got to the big dance with all those assets, he couldn't get us over the hump.
Yeah.
So if I'm Chicago, I'm saying, listen, I haven't seen Teddy Bridgewater. With that. So would a guy like Teddy take a 2-year bridge guy and I can say, you know what, buy Mitch Trubisky because it's clear that he's not the answer.
I mean, Dalton is in that category now.
Right.
Like, Dalton is firmly in that category now, which doesn't mean he's a bad quarterback.
But Bridgewater, I believe, is in that category, but he still is in the category of potentially being a franchise quarterback because we mentioned that today's Andy Dalton's birthday at 32. Yep. Bridgewater's younger than Dak Prescott.
Yeah. Yeah, so both those guys I think would be interesting options for the Bears. We're not there here to talk about 2020 yet, though. We're here to talk about 2019, although this next topic's going to kind of get us there, too.
Yeah.
The Denver Broncos, who last week traded their number one receiver, really. You could argue over whether it was him or Demaryius Thomas, but at times Pro Bowl-level receiver for them over the last 5 years, Emmanuel Sanders, they traded him to the Niners last week. So that was part of the idea that kind of grew into the idea that maybe they'll trade some more players. Maybe there'll be some other guys in the roster who will be available. We didn't expect Von Miller to be traded, but I think there was an expectation that Chris Harris could be on the block.
Right.
Chris Harris winds up staying on the Broncos roster. Yep. And like Derek Wolfe, Adam Gostis, there were some names there, some guys who can play that were going to be available. Chris Harris, I was told the asking price was a second rounder. They couldn't get that much for him. I think part of that's the contract that he's only signed through the end of the year, that you don't get any. I mean, you're basically renting him
right.
for eight games. I think, guys, the Broncos should have got what they could have got for some of those guys. Like, I think if I'm the Broncos, and I think it's part of John Elway's problem, is that he's so competitive and that he wants to win so bad that he becomes a little delusional at times. I actually like some of the players they brought in over the last couple of years through the draft. Now, I don't know if Drew Lock's going to be the answer, but you know, bringing in guys like Dalton Risner and Noah Fant this year. Last year, you saw Bradley Chubb and Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman.
Cortland Sutton.
Yeah, Cortland Sutton. Like, so I actually think that they've sort of rebounded the last 2 years. To me, this is time to rip the Band-Aid off and say, okay, we're building behind our younger players and start to build up some assets, because I do think there's a very real chance that in March and April, they're in play for one of the quarterbacks.
I mean, you should be getting as much draft capital as you can to be able to slide up and down that board, because we think that some of the teams that may have the worst record in the NFL don't need quarterbacks.
Right.
So you think of the Jets. You think of Washington.
Yep.
And those are teams that may not be in a search. So that's going to be valuable real estate to be at. So you're going to need equity to move up to those spots and maybe leap a team that wants a new quarterback, like Tennessee, like Tampa Bay. It's going to be a competition for people who want to jump up, and you need assets. And this was an opportunity for John Elway to get assets. I think John Elway probably needs a consultant to find him a way to be able to pick a quarterback, because as great as he is, he is horrendous at finding quarterbacks. And listen, I love Flacco just like you love Case Keenum. He is done. Barbecue chicken.
Right.
And that we thought he could be a bridge guy. No way, Jose.
Right. And now he's hurt. I mean, now he's hurt. Now Brandon Allen is starting, which I think, I mean, look, you know, to me it's almost going to happen naturally, Andrew, that they're going to be in position to select one of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, everyone jokes at Justin Herbert's height, or maybe Jacob Eason. Elway loves tall guys.
Please, not another Paxton Lynch.
But I'm telling you, if they don't fix that O-line, they even brought in Mike Munchak, and they still hold on every play. Garrett Bowles is a well-documented disaster at left tackle. There are so many more problems at quarterback there. And, you know, I worry about Elway, too. You know, even if you didn't think Elway was the future, if he can't pick a quarterback— First of all, with the ownership group situation, no one's going to be able to really fire.
No one knows where they're going.
No one knows where they're going. It feels like a franchise that is floating at sea, and I don't see them coming back to the glory
days. With no power. It's just floating at sea with no generator to get the engine going.
They bring in Justin Herbert next year. There's still problems all up and down. Von Miller's not getting younger.
That's why you should have got rid of Von Miller.
I totally would have done the fire sale right now. They did part of it with Emmanuel Sanders. But, yeah, I think you guys are right. I think they're taking a quarterback, but the problems are not going away. And Elway is, unfortunately, he's the cause of a lot of these problems.
Yeah. Von Miller's going to be 31 next year.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you can still get something significant for him. And I look at a player like that, as great as he is, it's like if it's going to take you 2 years to get good again,
right?
How good are you going to be? How good is he going to be when you're good again?
He's a thing. Like, yeah, he's a finishing piece.
Yeah,
like he's a guy that when you need to get over the hump, okay, I need a situational pass rusher. I think if you want to extend his football life, I think you want to maybe start putting him on a pitch count where he's not out there on first and second down all the time, where he's being able to kind of regroup and things of that sort. I mean, they had the perfect example. They brought DeMarcus Ware over, and they seen how it works and how it could work. Now, they may think that we can do that here because we got Bradley Chubb, but you're nowhere near winning. When you brought over DeMarcus Ware and you put him on a pitch count, you were in still win mode. I mean, I would have definitely traded him. He could have been a finishing piece, because he would have been a top guy on the market. For somebody that was ready to win now.
Von Miller should do the Chris Long championship tour where he comes in for the Patriots or the Eagles. Yep. And or Michael Bennett has done recently. He's be great. I thought he'd be a great piece for a team that was right on the thought they could do.
I'm trying to think of that team because you look at San Francisco, they got everything that
they don't need them.
Right. You think of a team like
Philly for sure. They really miss those guys. They need a pass rusher.
Yeah, but they couldn't fit that money in. I don't know how much, even though they always find a way to fit. I don't know how they'd be in the running. They're rumored with Le'Veon Bell. Like, how are they going to fit more money into the cap? I don't know. Roseman must be the greatest capologist in the history of sports. Yeah. I'm trying to think. A team like Baltimore would have been perfect.
Okay. Yeah. Our last topic before we get out of here. This was really interesting to me. We'll keep this one quick. But so this is I think we would refer to as a basketball trade, right? So the Dolphins trade for Aqib Talib, who's on IR and not eligible to come back until week 15, right?
With to Aqib, week 15.
With Aqib Talib comes a 2020 fifth-round pick, right? You guys know what's going back to the Rams?
What?
Not only a seventh-round pick, a 2022 seventh-round pick. So, like... that's like less than nothing. That's like less than nothing.
You get that in compensatory pick. You, they're basically going to get you a compensatory pick.
A seventh round pick 2.5 years from now.
They must really hate Talib, and they got rid of Peters as
well. I don't
think
it was hating Talib, though. I think it was just offloading a salary. Like, it's like, look, like he's not going to play for us again, $4.5 million. Yeah. They must not have felt good about like his ability to play. Because if you think you're going to be in the playoffs, exactly. You hold on to a guy like that.
You got to get Ramsey. You got Ramsey, so now you got to pay him.
And what's interesting about it, though, is like the first thing you think about is, okay, are they clearing space for a trade? Now they can't make a trade. So this has to be clearing space to go and get, I mean, go and take care of someone.
Yeah,
care of Ramsey, maybe, yeah.
Start to get that structure because he said, you know, remember they were like, oh, we're going to get it done. He's like, no, it's a time limit on getting this done.
So the Dolphins, by the way, nobody's going to play for them the rest of it. They're really all in on this tank.
I mean,
right?
They're so committed that yesterday they were like, oh my God, Ryan Fitzmagic is doing his thing. let's go cover zero blitz on 3rd and 20. That ought to get him.
Xavien Howard had a big pick in the game, right? On IR the next
day. Right. Yeah. What are you doing?
There's no
trying to ruin our plan?
There's no ligament damage or anything else. He's just on IR. His knees hurt.
I remember Ozzy did that year one with Tony Pashos. I say your wrist hurt, right? He's like, no, it's good. I just sprained it. I said your wrist hurt, right? my wrist. Never seen a guy go to IR for a sprained wrist.
If you were Xavien Howard and they asked you to go on IR, would you be, hey, all right, cool.
He's like, hey, no sweat. Hey, collect this check. I'm going to start working out for next year right now, get my mind right, start lifting weights. No need to get injured doing this stuff.
There it is. All right, well, we got to go downstairs and shoot our TV show. Bart, Andrew, appreciate you coming in.
Pleasure.
My pleasure.
All right, thanks to those guys. Andrew and Bart are the best. Every week we do MMQB TV together. We have great off-air conversations. We have great on-air conversations. It's always fantastic having those guys aboard. I'm glad that all the podcast listeners got to hear it too. So we're going to jump right into the mailbag. You guys know how this works every week. We are looking for your questions. There are two ways that you can get to us. First, you can get to us through email, and that is an email address we've set up for the podcast, BreerMailbag@gmail.com. Again, that's my last name, mailbag@gmail.com, B-R-E-E-R, mailbag@gmail.com. BreerMailbag, of course, is all one word. Or you can call us and leave a voicemail. We actually prefer that you do this, 201-596-4346. That's 201-596-4346. You guys ask the questions every week. You get them to me, and I am answering all of them each and every week. Shelby, start with question number one.
This is from Heath. What kind of performance do the Pats expect to get from Harry and Wynn this season when they return from IR?
There are very few receivers as rookies that have succeeded in that offense. And if you look at the guys that have, right, there are three that really stand out to me. Deion Branch in 2002, Julian Edelman in 2009, and then Malcolm Mitchell in 2016. What all three of those guys had in common, they didn't miss a ton of practice time. Now, two of the three, Edelman and Mitchell, did wind up battling injury eventually. But they had a pretty clean start to their career. They were able to build some momentum going into the season. And so I don't know what N'Keal Harry is going to be 2 or 3 years from now. And I know that the Patriots really like the head he's got for the game. In fact, one of the things they liked about him was how he was able to sort of show his football know-how to them in the pre-draft process, like his recall. They do this thing with their with draft prospects. They teach them something at the beginning of the day, and they want them to spit it back out at the end of the day. And he aced that test. So it's not like he doesn't have a head for the game physically. His first round pick, so that part's there. Of course, there's not great precedent, and I don't think there's any precedent for a rookie receiver missing this kind of time and still being able to produce in that offense. It's a very tough offense on receivers, and so I think if I were the Patriots right now, the rookie receiver I would be looking at as the guy that I would want to try and really sort of build a role for, and maybe even rely on a little bit when you get to December and January, would be Jacoby Myers. And then, you know, as I see it, whatever you get from Harry's a bonus. Question number two, Shelby.
This one is from Brandon. Does the Jets fire sale carry over to the offseason, and is Gase just treading water until he is canned?
So First of all, I don't know what happens with Adam. I think a lot of that's going to depend on what they look like in December. How does Sam Darnold look like? How does Sam Darnold look in December? You know, is the locker room still engaged? And also, what influence does Woody have? I mean, it looks like Woody is going to be back maybe next summer. And so I think there's some question about what Woody Johnson's influence might be over all of this. And so those questions, I think, are sort of lingering out there. What does the fire sale do going forward? I think it's just what we had talked about, me and Bart and Andrew. You know, I think for the most part, most players understand the business they're in. It could affect some of them short term. I do think that the one thing that's sort of hanging out there is, does Jamal Adams become Jalen Ramsey in 2020? Is the possibility out there that he got a little sniff of what it might be like to be a Dallas Cowboy or a Baltimore Raven, and he said himself, like, I come from winning. Does that stick with him now? And if things don't go well over the next 8 weeks, 9 weeks, is he in a position where he wants to ask out? So that'd be the one thing I'd monitor. It's going to be an interesting, you know, 2+ months in New Jersey. Question number three, Shelby.
We have a voicemail.
Please help me. Tell me why the Chicago Bears did not trade for Ryan Fitzpatrick. I just don't get it. Like, please, can anybody answer this for me? Like, I am, like, if anybody watched the Monday night game, you could tell he had a lack of talent around him. Now, you put Ryan Fitzpatrick and Matt Nagy offense with the supporting cast he got, I think we can go 8 or 9 straight. But just like a guard pack situation where Ryan plays sit on his hands and don't want to swallow the truth and burnt reality. I just don't get it. You know, people talk about the offense, how you can't find nobody to come in and learn offense. The man is a Harvard graduate. Seriously. Thank you. Have a good day.
I love it. That's a sports radio call right there. Even got a Bulls reference. He talked about the Gar Pax regime there in Chicago. Listen, I think that there's, for better or worse, an investment in Mitch Trubisky that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy aren't ready to walk away from. As logical as it looks to all of us, the idea that maybe you bring in a veteran who's got some pelts on the wall, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Andy Dalton, somebody like that, I think that they look at it as we've got a quarterback in year three and we sold out to go and get him. I mean, they even gave up extra draft picks to go up in the top five, to go from number three to number two to make sure that they got Mitch Trubisky, to draft him over Deshaun Watson, to draft him over Patrick Mahomes. It's, you know, you look at this and it's, I think it's just the level of investment you've made in the player. You feel a commitment to him and you feel a need to see it through. Will that turn out to be faulty reasoning, a faulty way of looking at it? It's definitely on the board. Trubisky has not looked great. Nagy's offense is complex, takes a while to learn, takes a while to get where you need to go. In fact, Nagy told me, like, I believe this was last year, it's usually year three when quarterbacks really start to get it in that type of offense. But the flip side of this is time's wasting. And you've got a defense that's still elite. You don't know how long the defense is going to be elite for, based on their cap situation, based on the age of some guys. How is that all going to change over the next few years? We'll see. It's an interesting situation. So I think Trubisky's absolutely in a position where he needs to play really well over the next 2 months to ensure that he's the quarterback in 2020. I think the level of investment they made him in 2017, though, has led them into this spot where they do feel the need to see what they've been building with Mr. Trubisky over the last 2.5 years through. Shelby, question number four.
From Ken. How close were the Browns and Giants on Solder, or was Trent Williams screwing this up as this was their top priority and he became available late?
I don't think that. So I'll start with Solder. I just don't think that was happening unless you blew Dave Gettleman away. The reason why, it's a situation that involves your young quarterback, and you want to make sure you've got the right infrastructure around your young quarterback. That's also why the idea of Evan Engram being moved was a pipe dream. Look, so much of a quarterback at that age's success is based on his circumstances. And you look at the guys who had big year two, right? Patrick Mahomes had big year two. Carson Wentz had a big year two. Mahomes won the MVP. Wentz, if he hadn't gotten hurt at the end, might have won the MVP. What do those two guys have in common? Those guys had great offensive lines in front of them. They had a balanced group of skill players. And so I think you got to do what you can, even if it means keeping players that you might see as commodities that might not be on the team anymore when you get really good. It's incumbent on you to try to create the best situation for your young quarterback. And part of the problem with Solder is if you move on from him, you know, he may not be Walter Jones or Anthony Munoz out there, but if you move on from him, I think you got an ugly situation on your hands that could affect the development of the young quarterback. As for Trent Williams, I think this was as much as anything else about the about the Washington Redskins sticking to their price. They wanted a first round pick. Remember, the Browns didn't have a first-round pick last year. John Dorsey's got a college scouting background. I think it kills John Dorsey the idea of not having a first-round pick in two straight years. And so I don't think that he was ever of a mind to move his first-round pick. And right now, with the record being what it is, that first-round pick might wind up being fairly high. Shelby, question number, is this five? Five.
From Nikhil. Which NFL teams are regarded to have the best medical staff? Are smaller market teams at a disadvantage for not having access to the medical facilities and specialists that larger markets might have?
That's a really great question, actually. And I wish I had a better answer for you. I would tell you, one team that's got a reputation for having a great medical staff is the New York Giants. Is that related to the fact that they're in New York City? Sure, I think that's part of it. The Cowboys have a good medical staff. The Kansas City Chiefs training staff is a group of people that that Andy Reid brought with him from Philadelphia, very, very well regarded. A lot of teams that have been involved on the sports science side, the Philadelphia Eagles, generally do well in that area, in the medical and training area. And so I wish I could give you a better answer than that. What I would tell you is that a lot of the teams that have great medical staffs are in the bigger markets, which, you know, of course would have to be related to some degree to the resources around them. The other thing is teams that invest in things like sports science tend to invest on the medical side as well. Shelby, question number six.
Hey, Albert, it's Thomas. Now that Belichick's won his 300th game, what's your sense of how many more years you think he'll coach? And then also want to get your take on the story that came out last week about Brady not being in New England next year. Just wondering if you had any insight or had thoughts on that. Thanks.
Yeah. All right, let's start with Belichick. I don't know that the end is necessarily in sight. I'm not sure he knows when he's going to be done. I don't think he's sick of it. I think he's got that place wired to a level where it's not as hard as it used to be. I've told this story a few times. I've heard that he's come back from Nantucket a little later than he used to, which indicates that he's more comfortable in the way the place is being run and feels okay if he misses a day or two on the back end of his summer vacation. I think that's telling too, because it just sort of illustrates how efficient he's been able to make that whole operation. You know, how his fingerprints are all over it, how it's really become one with him in a certain way. Not to get existential about this or anything, but I do think that there's an element where it's a little bit easier for you to run the show, and you feel a little less taxed by the work, and so you're able to enjoy what you love about the job. And I think he still loves the job. And I do think there's some side benefits, to continuing coaching. One would be chasing Don Shula, becoming the winningest coach in NFL history, which is actually, 4 or 5 years down the line, not far off. And then there's the idea of shepherding the franchise into the next era, which I think has always been sort of something out there for him to enhance his legacy, add another layer to it, to get the organization past the Brady era. So that brings us to Brady. I would just tell you, this isn't based on reporting done over the last 7 or 8 days. This is based on just my sense from 15 years being around the guy. I don't know that he's got the stomach to leave New England. I don't know that he's got the stomach to hit the reset button and start all over somewhere else. I just don't know. Because I've seen these things go sideways in the past. I've heard rumblings that he's not happy about X, Y, or Z. And always when it comes to the decision time, whether it's deciding whether to hold out, whether it's deciding whether to just hold the line on a contract, he's always been back where, you know, he always winds up, which is in the quarterback room, in the meeting room, on the practice field, back in New England. And so I don't know that he's got the stomach to sit in front of a contract with, say, the Chicago Bears, the Tennessee Titans, the Los Angeles Chargers, and actually sign that thing. What could be interesting is if we get to March and that idea presents itself and the Patriots call his bluff and the Patriots are offering less, what does he do? I do think that the likelihood, overwhelming likelihood to me, would be one of two scenarios. He retires, which I think is possible, or he winds up playing another year with the New England Patriots. My personal sense is that he's not going to play somewhere else. Could change. I might feel differently in January or February. It's just the way I feel right now. Appreciate you guys coming out. I want your feedback because we did a special trade deadline edition this week, and we're going to have this up tonight. Shelby, our producer extraordinaire, is going to be burning the midnight oil on that to get it out to you guys. And so we want your feedback. What can we do better? What do you guys like? What do you not? What don't you like? You can give me all of that on my Twitter feed at Albert Breer, on my Facebook at Albert R. Breer, on my Instagram at Albert_Breer. And you can get all the MMQB NFL podcasts on one feed now. That's this podcast. That's Connor and Jenny's podcast. That's the Deep Dive podcast. That's the Monday Morning podcast. We're all in one place now. And you can also, on another feed, get the MMQB News podcast. That's where you can go to get your kind of five-minute bite-size like recap of the news, everything that's happened in the NFL, perfect for your drive home. Both those feeds are on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. We'll see you guys then.